George Amable has published his poetry, fiction, and nonfiction in the USA, Canada, Europe, England, Wales, South America, Australia, and New Zealand in over 100 anthologies, magazines, journals, and periodicals, including The New Yorker, The New Yorker Book of Poems, Harper's Poetry, American Poetry Review, Bottega Oscura, The Globe and Mail, The Malahat Review, The Penguin Book of Canadian Verse, Saturday Night Poetry Australia, Sewer Poetry Canada Review, and Canadian Literature. Amable has published 12 books. The Presence of Fire with McClellan and Stewart in 1982 won the CAA National Poetry Prize. His long poem, Jure, placed third in the CBC Literary Competition for 1991. What We Take With Us Going Away was shortlisted for the CBC Literary Prize in 2003, and he's the subject of a special issue of Prairie Fire from May 2000. Diminuendo was awarded third prize in the Petra Kenny International Poetry Competition for 2005, and A Raft of Lilies won second place in the MAC National Poetry Contest Friends, and in the 2013 Writer's Digest Rhymed Poetry Contest. A fictional work, Small Change, with Libros Libertat in 2011, and a long poem, Dancing with Mirrors, with Porcupine's Quill in 2011, both won Bressani Awards. Operation Stealth Seed, with Signature Editions in 2019, won the Michael Van Rooy Genre Fiction Award. Please welcome George Amable.
Thank you very much, Angelina. This is really quite exciting. I'm going to start with a poem that's reminiscent of what it's like in Winnipeg during August. So I hope that that will alleviate some of the ice and snow that surrounds you all. I'm actually out here in BC, which is about 8 degrees outside, and the sun is still shining. This poem is called August Peonies. Lallygagging on bent stems, late this year because of the snow in May, their ragtag magenta cluster heads freshen the still heat like the brush of deep sea crinolines, as the purple ripple kiss of a breeze opens their bunched petals just enough to let them breathe before they ease back into light repose, poised at the edge of time-lapse attention, like us, who lose momentum in the heavy air, rich with the scent of ripening wheat that drifts in from the fields over the slow-moving river as the afternoon nods and lengthens into shade, into thoughtfulness, and the sky deploys an argosy of softly tinted clouds, fresh blooms without stems that sail where we cannot go, all the way to the edge of everything, where daylight looks back once, then disappears. Next poem is an older one, but I think it still works. It hasn't broken down yet. It's called Wood Smoke. Elusive blue, slipstream of the forest. Everywhere, even at the edge of the sea, its tang sweet flare will open trails into leaf shadow, into legendary quests and clearings, dirt floors and thatched huts. Whisper of morning, harbinger of the shimmering, leave-taking sun. It brings tears to the eyes, but is a comfort against the infinite vertigo of galactic dust. Hearth's aura, wraith like a twisted shawl, dance figure in empty sleeves, mummy gauze unwound from the winter dark rooftop. A high, thin plume lifted into the sky on a still afternoon. It survives in the mist, in the night air, fragrance of stone altars, invisible trace and spoor of wilderness treks, fabric of memory, loose weave the color of distance. Rainforest crackled and rushed into piled cloud, prayer and afterlife of the flamed trees, arbutus, bloodswood, ash. And all this from a flash in the overcast, a spark struck among tinder from steel against rock. Pages are sticking together. Okay. This poem was written in New York. My partner's a marathon runner, and she ran the New York Marathon. And I stayed with my college roommate and his apartment. And this poem is about fireworks. It's called Design After Heraclitus. Heraclitus, the pre-Socratic Greek philosopher, and he, I guess what he's known for mostly, if you haven't actually read his work, is the statement, the way up and the way down are the same. We know something is up when we hear waggles barking out on the terrace. It doesn't sound too serious, but between her clustered yelps, the polite clap of thunder piques our attention. As we step into the cold wind, the black sky above the straight-up, straight-backed canyon of 73rd Street explodes with pock flack. Flashes and dense nodes whose burst kernels release their inner selves. The blue velvet sleeves and valves of a tube sponge spurt from a little white cloud's flickering fist. An eruption of green jellyfish parachutes down and frays in the breeze. Whizzing whelk pink pinwheels unpack yellow and coral pipe cleaner stalked anemones. And at last, from a flare of cordite gold, the willow slender arms of the sea star reach and glow. A sky lit by rainbow smoke, and down below, the harbor, where a submarine lies dark and billow. This next poem is about sailing, and it's kind of a metaphor for adventure, and it's dedicated to Dr. Howard Bellin, who is my college roommate, who I stayed with in New York. It's called Mindset. The slack mainsail cracks full and the hull hums in a white rush. But this is not a race against time, which is nothing but the wind speed of cloud shadow. Sunlight echoes from the steel shrouds. The anodized islets blurs the shoreline's green stones, gray dots, thin shelves of sand. And he must rewrite the map of his journey on this headlong open-air school for one, skimming the depths barefoot over mesh mats and sleek teak as the horizon feathers up and the spindrift is a whisk of jewels scattering highlights from sundown's fiesta before everything cools to the blue dark of a summer night and the constellations wheel overhead. Lords and ladies of the discontinuous, they remind us that knowledge is not a reservoir or a stream, but a net in constant need of repair. This next one is an older poem. It's an elegy for a friend of mine named Jim Keller. One. The late breeze makes them look. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't tell you the title. It's important to know the title. It's called A Raft of Lilies for Jim Keller. One. The late breeze makes them look as though they are adrift among long shadows at the end of the yard. These hybrid orientals, this gift from a dead friend. Year after year, their light green javelin tips pierce black earth and sprout spiky leaves that gather sunlight into the cells that mix colors for their lavish openings where petals curl up and over like shavings from a keen blade, tiger striped. Egg yolk on blood orange, fuchsia splashed with milk, dawn pink streaking rain cloud gray, lilac in Venice rust, or a monochrome flare, spotted with magic dust, mango on violet, mole on songbird yellow, midnight blue on thin gold. Two. Through the dark months, he planted basil, sage, rosemary, and thyme in styrofoam cups on the windowsill, tended their delicate leaves until they softened the office with fragrances of summer air, while he basked like a plant himself, battling depression, spending hours at the bank of lights above his desk. Eyes closed, his mind free to dream responsibilities. Building a 23-foot yawl, he would sail out of Hecla Island and live on for months at a time, crossing and crisscrossing the seventh largest lake in the world, or working with the stubborn patience of a composer, developing the strains of open-throated blooms that stir and seem to whisper now, like travelers who have come a long way across wide water without sound. That last line is a quotation from the remarkable poem by Wallace Stevens called Sunday Morning. Okay, two more. This one is one of those poems that just doesn't work and you keep trying, then you quit. And then you come back to it and it falls apart and then it comes back together in a totally different way. It's called Coming of Age on My 84th Birthday. It took me a very long time to become an adult. Something I should have learned when I was young enough to take it seriously explodes slowly like a zucchini blossom announcing another surprise in the laddered shades of aging. Forget the calendar with its beeches and snow-tufted cedars. Think instead of the way music tends to extend the distance between now and now again. time, a perplexity of stars and planets, deft conjectures, and a down-to-earth God, incarnate in one line of the poem. Grass, the beautiful uncut hair of graves. Distant but close enough to wake up the Buddhist emptiness I missed in a lifetime of lectures, paper, futures, mainline entertainments. Something I already know, too many names for, changes again, like the flame from a sunset lake. In that moment before the last light fails, and maybe much too late, I'm in love with everything that remains unsaid, unsayable, but suddenly heard in the sound of rain on a slate roof. And this last poem is another one that was written a long time ago and then rewritten and then rewritten again. So it may have to be written five more times. I don't know, but this is the way it is now. It's just called a riff, as in musical riff. I sit on a park bench in the dark. Below me, the river is asleep in its glistening skin of lights, and all the sails are furled. This is my hour of translucence, a brace of shadows wrapped in veils of moonlight, veils of haze. And there are voices, faint as the flutter of moth wings. I do not know much about rivers, but I think I could find one anywhere. A leaf rocks down and floats in the grass. If I picked it up, I would see the branching veins like tributaries, like a thin tree, or the intricate system that ferries blood thousands of miles anywhere, everywhere in the body. I think of the first word no one remembers, how it split and split and split again into hundreds of roots for languages that shape our breath into speech or song. A breeze comes up and scatters the mist. I'm still here, but it feels like I'm flowing away. In the hills across the water, fireflies pulse among the stars. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George.